Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Mike McMahon, the showrunner and creator of Star Trek Lower Decks, and you are watching Trek Culture.
And welcome back to the Trek Culture Podcast. We are your hosts, Sean and Tom, and we are joined by the effervescent Mick Jost. How are you, sir? Welcome back.
I'm smiling through tears right now. You know, it's been a rough weekend.
It kind of has, because a lot of people are very sad because Lower Decks has been cancelled, whereas I know you're very sad because Strange New Worlds was renewed. So, yeah. I mean, it's... no, I joke, but I think we're going to jump straight into, I think, the topic that's on everyone's minds at the moment, which is the news coming out of Paramount.
For over two centuries, you're listening to the Federation News Network.
In one breath, Paramount giveth. Strange New Worlds Season 4 and Paramount taketh away with the announcement that Lower Decks is coming to an end at the end of Season 5. And Tom, you lovely editor man, please have a censorship thing ready because I am pissed off is the short answer.
I think I'll allow that word. I think that word can slip through. We'll find
Thank
out.
Thank you. Thank you.
But yeah, what an interesting way of doing it as well. What a strange... way to give the news. It was almost like they were being like, this will soften the blow. Here you go, everyone.
It was definitely like that. It was because, I mean, realistically, we're not even going to see a new episode of Strange New Worlds Season 3 until 2025. So they're like, what can we do to make this a little easier for fans? Give it a more positive spin. Oh, let's give Strange New Worlds Season 4, which, I mean... I'm not going to look down on that news. Excited for a fourth season to be guaranteed well out in advance. Certainly better than if, you know, it worked. If they would have just said, hey, guys, Lower Decks is ending with this upcoming season, then probably would have been a lot worse on the Internet that Friday.
I think so. I think you raised a pretty good point there, because if we think back to when, I mean, the obvious parallels are being made, which is Prodigy, right? Even though right. I do think it's a very different scenario, but the obvious parallels being just like they said, well, it was kind of their arms were twisted and it came out that Prodigy was, you know, ending and coming off the platform and everything. Look at how in the announcement it's like, you know, yes, it's coming to an end, but it's staying on the platform and you know, kind of maybe they'll get picked up somewhere else, and also look, you've got season four of Strange. It's they totally knew, because of I think the backlash over how the, you know, how the cancellation of Prodigy was announced must have fed into this decision. And I do not blame them for, in one respect, for how they've announced it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I feel like, and we've talked about this in the Trek Culture WhatsApp chat, the energy almost feels different between Prodigy cancellation and Lower Decks cancellation. But, you know, apples to oranges, as you said, Prodigy was being removed from the platform. We knew season two was on the way and it had been confirmed with a release date. And then all of a sudden, what? We're not going to get it and we may not even see it ever. You know, it was one of those things where there was an urgency to push it. Whereas with Lord Dex, I feel it's, I don't know. There's definitely been movements to save Lower Decks, but they're kind of disorganized. There's a few petitions floating around with a few thousand signatures. I've been kind of surprised. We haven't seen any official like efforts by like Jack Quaid, Mike McMahon, Tawny Newsom trying to push it in the same way. I mean, Prodigy's creators and executive producers were like day one sharing these petitions. I don't know if it's necessarily... I don't know. What do you chalk that up to, Sean? Do you think that they're wanting it to come to an end? Is it just they know it's run its course or, the, you know, what is that?
It's a good question, because the only we did a check. The only cast member who seems to have made any kind of statement about hopefully it gets picked up is Jack Quaid, because he put out that Instagram post where he basically signs off with hopefully we will find a new home somewhere. Mike McMahon said that he fully believes that, you know, our team will turn up in other adventures in other ways. But now, this is by no means am I condemning Eugene Cordero for not making a statement. He's not very active on socials regardless. Noel Wells has been retweeting some lovely support over the character of Tendi. And likewise, Tawny Newsom hasn't been active on socials for a while. So it's not like, well, they didn't say anything. It's more of a case of, I think, the people who are more active kind of get it straight. Like Jerry O'Connell, for example, put out a nice statement, whereas Dawn Lewis hasn't, I think, used socials since the middle of March. Things like that. So, but yeah, to agree, yes, from day one, we had the creatives behind Star Trek Prodigy were, you know, they were out in force and have more or less remained sort of doing that as well. The Hagemans actually tweeted a lovely message of support to Mike McMahon and the Lower Decks team, you know, saying that, look, we love the show, we think it's brilliant, you know. It's not lost on me as well that although, yes, Discovery was cancelled, we've lost both of the new animated shows. And I say lost, so there has been discussion as well about... You know, there has been a very vocal section of the fandom that are, some are outraged, some are just upset, some are confused. And I think we'll discuss that because, you know, I am both confused and there is a numbers game. Whereas, you know, kind of that, well, there you go then. You know, it's like they tried animation again and it didn't take off. I'd argue that it did take off, but we don't know the viewing figures. You know, was it the three of us and our families that have been watching it this whole time? And if so, yes, are welcome. No, like, what does it take to be considered a successful streaming show? And just before we go on with that, is that there are people who are quite vocally going, okay, right, it's gone, it's over, right, whatever, you know, five seasons is a good inning. Five seasons being a good inning, I don't necessarily disagree with as well. I think it's the fact that it has been clearly cancelled as opposed to it's coming to a close with its fifth and final season. And there is an important difference in that phrasing. And the fact that I think particularly Jack Quaid's post is still up about looking for a new home, that doesn't feel like it was a mistake. It doesn't feel like he shouldn't have said that or anything. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, like you said to the, just like viewership figures, you know, executives, television executives particularly, they're like Ferengi. You know, if it's making a profit, it's not getting canceled. And streaming has definitely complicated that a bit. And as you said, we haven't had official streaming figures for anything until like, I think like Discovery or like Picard season three was kind of where figures started being shared by companies and popping up on like Nielsen ratings. That wasn't really a thing until recently. But I've heard from inside sources that Prodigy and Lower Decks never historically pulled big numbers. And that is kind of understandable. There's a couple things just I know from my general TV experience that play into that. If you're someone who's on Twitter, You might see think Lower Decks is the most popular show imaginable. This happened years ago with Parks and Recreation. Parks and Recreation was hugely popular on the internet. Some would even think if you went on the internet, it looked more popular than The Office. But when you looked at the actual ratings, they weren't there. Twitter represents a very small part of the overall population, as loud as it can be at times. There's still the mass audiences. And I think if there was anything Lower Decks struggled from, is that it was something that was niche to get into. You had to be a fan of Star Trek, and you had to be a well-read fan of Star Trek to really have those jokes hit home a lot of the times. You had to know the references being made and stuff like that. So I could see where it could be alienating to the casual audience. That said, there's a guy on CinemaBlend who has never watched any Trek, but because he was a fan of Mike McMahon from Rick and Morty, watches Lower Decks and loves it. And I can't for the life of me. I'm like, so you like, you understand that? He's like, no, he doesn't care. So, you know, maybe it was something more people should have tried out.
Tom, you never saw Star Trek ever until you watched Lower Decks. And I believe that's still the case. So, I mean, do these, I think like genuinely, Tom, what do you like about Lower Decks?
It's fun and not in a, I don't know how to describe it. It's fun by design, I think, where other shows, you know, Strange New Worlds, Discovery, try and have fun in it. And it's more like, how can, it's more in that like Marvel sensibility, which is like, how can we make this big action-packed thick thing fun? Oh, we'll phone a couple of quips here and there, which isn't my favorite thing, where this show is designed in that kind of tone. And I it's, for a cartoon show, normally, you know, it's shorter, it's more compact, and they have to fill it with these many jokes, these many references. The story is always moving forward. So it's, and I like, I'm a big fan of sort of short storytelling, short media, because the limitations, I think, mean that you have to try really hard, basically. And I think Lower Decks have done that really well. And I was saying, like, when this was all happening on our WhatsApp chats and stuff, I was like, you know, this, I saw it as a show that could run and run and run, basically. But the good thing about this is that, unlike a lot of other Trek shows, there's never been the, you know, first or second season that is kind of rubbish that you have to get through to get to the good stuff. I'm assuming all five seasons of the show will be solid, and it will have a like I said in the chat, a good legacy. And I think that's a positive to take away. It is a shame that it's being cancelled, especially, you know, if everything's ending, right? We've got Discovery is ending, Prodigy, who knows? We've got Lower Decks finishing. Picard is probably done. I mean, it's done in the way that we know it is done. Whether they do any sort of spin-off or whatever, who knows? But that kind of fun Star Trek thing we're losing out on now, and we're getting some new stuff. But I'm just, and this is purely assumption, you know, with Section 31. And the Academy show and everything, and then however long Strange New Worlds is going to go on for, I think that the tone of those shows and films are all going to be similar-ish. I mean, the way they're shot and filmed, everything is going to be similar. Like, it would be good to have something like a Lower Decks to just cleanse the palate a little. So if this is finishing, it would be nice to have something like this come back in some other format.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we know nothing about Academy, so perhaps Academy will be more comedy focused. I know we know that it's YA focused, but you know, is it going to be Saved by the Bell, or is it going to be The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina? You know, we don't know.
Yeah.
I do hope there'll be a bit of a balance again, knowing that Tony Newsom is in the writers' room. I don't want to put too much pressure Otter, but at the same time, it's like, no, I'm delighted, you know, going to, yeah, bring the comedy. Mm-hmm. I made a point in a video the other day. It's like, Poor Old Academy needs to be good. I mean, yeah. It needs to be anyway, but, you know, they've just cancelled Lower Decks. Discovery has been cancelled. We're coming to the end of that. And yet they just announced that they've built the biggest standing set for a Star Trek series ever. It's for Academy and everything. It's like, for the love of God, please don't cancel that after one season.
Yeah.
You know.
Be miserable.
Like people will be just like, oh, wow, that was a great allocation of funds, wasn't it? So, I mean, we've made the point many times. It's in everyone's best interests for the show to be good and successful. You know, kind of like selfishly, we who get to talk about Star Trek, it's great for us, but also as fans. I mean, like, I would rather have more good Star Trek than not good Star Trek.
I'm a fan of things having a beginning, a middle, and end. Like, I do like things ending. Obviously, the difference a lot of the time at the moment is that they're being forced to end rather than their own natural conclusion. But at least so many things, The Simpsons just keeps going. And, you know, personally, I haven't really enjoyed The Simpsons for the last like 20 seasons. So, you know, do we want something to continue forever? No. But do we want the creators to choose if they get to stop or not? Yeah. It's interesting because the way that it's been announced, I was a big fan of the show The Marvelous Miss Maisel. And that finished like last year or something. And I think that was like 5 seasons or something like that. But on a podcast, she talked about how, like, you know, yes, she finished it, but it wasn't really up to her. It was being streamed on Amazon. And as she said, Amazon had orcs to pay for or something like that. Like, you know, they were putting a lot of money into other shows, and Marvelous Ms. Maisel was an expensive show with amazing sets and costumes and things. So, like, that was a similar situation, but it was kind of like, it wasn't announced as this show is being cancelled now. It was announced as this is the last season. But because her hand was forced to finish the show. And I'm surprised that that's not how this went. I'm surprised they weren't like, oh, yeah, we're finishing it now. But instead it was announced as, you know, this is being cancelled. It's just interesting. I mean, as we know, the streamers are just stopping things left, right, and center. At least we get to watch these shows. At least they're not just being pulled before they're even released. Well, I mean, that obviously that did happen with one of them. But it's just, it's a weird time.
I think what we're seeing, because this kind of coincides with it, is that when Discovery first launched, you had Paramount trying to get into the streaming game. That was their official, you know, jaunt into where they were CBS All Access at the time. But they were jumping into the streaming game to compete with Netflix and everything. And at that point in time, it was a golden era of Star Trek because they seemingly had the green light. Create, make lots of shows. Do what you need, get as much content to build our library as you can. And then I think it really peaked, and I'm sure, I don't know, you guys were there as well. I don't think we ever actually officially met until afterwards, but Star Trek Mission Chicago felt like the peak, where it was, we have all these shows on concurrently at the same time. We have Strange New Worlds about to happen. It's going to be awesome. The screeners arrived in my mailbox during Star Trek Mission Chicago. I was like, oh my God, this is so amazing. I'm going to love it. And then after that, it seemed like maybe once it was clear that Paramount Plus would never reach the levels of Netflix or anything like that, that's when the hammer started to drop and we slowly started to see stuff fall. And now I think we're at a point where there's definitely a clear messaging to me, especially watching what I've seen of Star Trek Discovery, that someone in the higher ups of Star Trek said Strange New Worlds has captured the formula for what we want to do with modern Trek. We want to do serialized character arcs, but we still want to leave that episodic kind of adventure-y part in between because we don't have as many episodes to run with anymore as we used to. And you see that, like, literally Discovery season, you know, right now. It's definitely a different tone than what it is. It has a more episodic tone in nature. It's just the characters having fun and kind of carrying out their arcs on the side, in addition to what's happening around them, in a way that we hadn't seen in previous seasons.
Yeah. And I think it's being handled in both those shows, for me personally, in a better way than Strange New Worlds does. It Strange New Worlds kind of goes at the beginning of each episode, this is what this episode is about. It's about this character. These are the things they've gone through. So this is what they're going to be discussed about. That might work for some people. For me, it doesn't, because I'm just being, it's like they're explaining the episode to me before the episode happens. I'm like, I'll figure that out by myself. And that way it doesn't feel like it's like, this episode is about this character and this situation. It's more organic, which is what I really like. And yeah, Discovery is doing that well, and Lower Decks does that well too.
Actually, you know what? Now, saying that, Tom, I think this is a perfect segue to move into our review of Discovery Season 5, Episode 3, Janelle.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, yes, third episode of season 5 of Star Trek Discovery, episode called Janelle. Tom, take it away. What is the episode about?
Cool. So, yes, this is a little thing I grabbed off the internet, just so you guys have more of an understanding, as well as us have more of an understanding what the actual episode is about while we discuss it. So on Trill, Captain Burnham, Book and Culber. This is a good way to find out how I'm bad at pronouncing people's names. must pass a dangerous test to prove themselves worthy of the next clue. Adira connects with Gray and Saru's first day as ambassador is complicated by his engagement to Tarina.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
There you go. That is the short explanation that we have for this episode. So, Mick, thoughts?
I said this on Twitter, and I echo it again, because this episode kind of reminded me how awesome of an actor Wilson Cruz is. We haven't really had a massive episode for him since the time he was reincarnated and stuff. I felt like season 4, he had his like anxiety thing going on, and it was all right. You know, this was like, okay, yeah. Now I'm reminded that Wilson Cruz is an actor because he's had me so hoodwinked into believing this whole time that he's, you know, Hugh Culber this whole time. Seeing him step into the body of someone new, I'm like, okay, this is, you know, this guy can do things. And that was just what I loved about it overall. I felt like he stole the show for me in a way and just made it so so entertaining. This part where he's like, wow, this guy really works out. It's just one of those like funny parts you got to laugh at because, you know, it's a line written to kind of brag on himself in real life. And I couldn't help but smile seeing that.
Yeah, that one was just like, because I was saying at the time, it's like, if anyone's seen Wilson Cruz's Instagram and in fact posts since this episode have aired, I mean, the man works out. The man works hard as well. And those uniforms, which I love, they're quite boxy almost. Like they're you know, they don't tend to show off, say, the muscles as much as some earlier ones, I mean, even the TNG ones, I mean, you could tell Michael Dorn went to the gym. So kind of I love the whole unzipping the jacket and be like, you know, yeah, do you know what? I earned this. Yeah, just give me this for a second.
I think other than that, the Saru and Tarina stuff, that was, you know, that was good. I thought there's something interesting about that. I hate to spike this in the middle of it, but Cinema Blend's Adam Holmes, he did a interview with Callum Keith, I believe is how you say his name. Yeah. He plays Rainer. There's almost a sense when he was talking to him, and I can't say this officially on the record, but it seems as though, based on what he said in the story, he talked about having missed opportunities to do more things with Rainer later on. And I was like, well, the implication that Rainer would still be on Discovery at the end of this season, would that mean that Saru would not rejoin Discovery at the end of the season? So I thought there was something interesting there, to where I was like, you know, does that mean that Saru would have been written off at the end of the season in the natural conclusion? I don't know. But yeah, I thought that was a great one for him. I thought it was kind of goofy, the weird, like, I don't know. There's always it's cutesy to have like elder actors playing this lovey-dovey romance thing. It's like I'm watching The Golden Bachelor and Star Trek. At times, you know, just watching elderly couples navigate stuff like school children. And that's always fun to watch.
Wait, if this is the Golden Bachelor, does that mean that Saru and Tarina are going to divorce in 3 months?
Yeah, I like that. That was very timely and a relevant reference.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, Gary Turner.
The strange things that come up in your suggested, you know, topics. I'm just like, yeah, just kidding. Yeah. Anyway, right, there we go. Yeah, yay, Sean did a reference. But yeah, I love it. My favorite line, I think, of the episode was Tarina going, I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember. I'm confused. What in my behavior gave you the impression I required a caretaker? I'm like, yes. It
snaps. Yeah. Snaps all around.
Absolutely. I really dig her, because she is a Vulcan who seems to be so comfortable with the level of emotion versus logic that she puts out there, because we do get cutesy stuff, and we also get, oh, she will logic you into the grave if needs be.
Yeah, no, definitely. One of those, so many questions I have about the 32nd century that I hope Starfleet Academy dives into further in its storytelling. There's so much we almost need episodic kind of version just to kind of flesh out this universe better. Because I feel like we've gotten so many breadcrumbs throughout Discovery since season 3, where I'm like, oh, I wish we could dive into this further. But Discovery's not really that show, you know, it's about telling the story that involves the crew. So it's my hope that Starfleet Academy kind of, you know, they're at an academy, they're learning about the world. So hopefully us as the viewer will learn about the state of the 32nd century in a grander way.
What did we think of Adira and Gray in this episode?
Well, you know, it wasn't, that was, you know, as it felt like, okay, we have to acknowledge this kind of thing. And that's just kind of the vibe it had all the way through. You know, I thought the performances were fine. I thought Blue and Ian did a great job. But at the same time, it was just one of those things where it was like, okay, it almost felt like, okay, let's do this to get it out of the way kind of thing. There hasn't been a big Adira and Gray scene in a while. We need to address the relationship so we can move on from it.
I think
that's fair.
I think that's kind of my main thoughts for this episode. Like, I normally say I avoid Sean's ups and downs so I have like a fresh perspective on it and stuff, but I had to edit the ups and downs for the last week, so I know exactly what Sean thought. And I do think me and Sean actually have pretty similar thoughts on this episode. It's basically like, oh, cool, we get to see some Trill stuff again and some symbiote stuff. That's really cool. But yeah, the Adira and Gray relationship, don't really care, not too bothered. Every time we cut back to it, I'm like, okay, let's watch this bit until it's done. And then I said last week, like, I'm not super interested in the Saru stuff. I think it's basically, what I'm saying is that it's interesting, but I'm not too interested is what I'm like. So the Saru stuff is interesting, but I'm not super interested in it compared to other stuff that's going on in the in the show and the episode. And it's the same with like the big space bug fight scene, right? It was the thing that I think we both agreed on, where it's cool. The space bug things are really interesting and cool looking, but it is a long padding action sequence that just sort of keeps going. And it doesn't, it's not so necessary. Like I really like my action stuff to be short and sweet, like to the point, to really feel visceral, unless you're like a, like the Raid or something like that, where it's like a martial arts film where the entire film is about that, you know, like a Mad Max Fury Road or something where like, yeah. But that's difficult. And these types of shows don't really do that. That's not what they're really about. So when they do these action sequences, they go on for a while. It's mostly people taking cover and talking and shouting and, until it's over with and they figure it out. But not saying that we shouldn't have had it. I just think, you know, cut it by half, really. Or we could have two different action sequences. This is the first one. Make it shorter, we go to the next one or whatever. It's just a shame. That's what I found about this episode. Lots of interesting stuff in it, but just sadly not done in a way that had me super interested. All saying that, though, I did really like the Rainer sequence with all the interviews. It kind of reminded me, like, those type of montage stuff is always fun. It's like the classic, like, 80s stuff where, you know, people are trying on different clothes and you have the people like nodding and then shaking their head and all that kind of stuff. Like it's easy to be interested in that. And also he's like an interesting character, and the different interviews that he had is fun, and seeing him interact with them and then having Tilly actually get angry with him. And then the stuff that you said in the ups and downs as well, Sean, where you were like, I really liked that because it kind of played on the trope where she was like, you know, permission to speak freely, and then just started speaking. And he was like, I never gave you permission to speak freely. And it's like, I really liked that. So yeah, lots of good stuff. Just slightly a shame of how it was executed, I think.
That's it. Yeah, I think that is the worst thing I'll say about it, is that I think it could have been a bit tighter. And there are some bits where it does run on. We mentioned, yeah, about the space bug. So someone asked me the other day, you know, are they just, you know, is Discovery adding stuff to lore for the sake of it? And I was saying, I don't know. I think that if we'd had the budget in the 90s, we would have seen these bugs on Trill, or, you know, right. We would have spoken about it. I think that's more just we can, therefore we do, yeah, at this stage. But definitely, I think Rainer and Tilly. Ooh, it's for me, it's a coin toss between Rainer and Tilly and Tarina and Saru for the two most interesting pairings of the episode. Unfortunately, the stuff on Trill, while again, Wilson Cruz brilliant in this episode, it's not about, I'm not trying to be like, oh, this was terrible or anything. It's nothing like that. I just thought that was just too padded. And because that was our main story, I think it came across worse because that was the main focus. Whereas if, let's say, the main focus had been Rainer gets to know the crew, but of course, that's not what we do on Discovery. This week, I truly felt Book had no reason to be there. Like, why was he on Trill? I get Quajon, all right, cool. Wasn't it handy that he was there? But there was no reason for him to be there.
Well, he does make the art. He does advocate for himself before we go out. I do remember the line because it stuck out to me, where he's like, this is how I get my life back. Like, I need to be a part of this to prove to start the Federation that I've atoned for my crimes. So let me be a part of this so that I can further show that kind of thing. It was kind of more like, yeah, you don't need to be along, but let me, you know, let me do this. Let me look good so I can get out of the penal colony at some point in the near future.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, I'm definitely in this for altruistic reasons. It's like, were they serving a food you didn't like at the penal colony this week? Is that what it was? Yeah. I mean, and you know what? Fair, and I really liked, you know, does that make you uncomfortable? And she goes, convince me it shouldn't. Brilliant. Well done. And then it's just dropped. Yeah. I might be being over here. I think it stuck out a bit more in this episode, because I thought in the first two episodes, it was like, no, there is a reason for Book to be here. And it was done quite well with the first two episodes. And the third one, it was a bit like, well, Book's here now.
Yeah,
there's There's three things that the two of you said that I feel like I just need to address. First off, one doesn't need any response. Tom, I really want a raid style Star Trek movie. I wish Section 31 was going to be that with crazy Indonesian style fight scenes. Two, mentioning is Discovery adding things just to be there. I would also agree. Yeah, they might be doing that, but they're kind of beholden to. They're the 32nd century show. You know, they have to lay the groundwork for this new era and show us new things. It's always my pet peeve when they're like, this alien doesn't look like this alien. I was like, it's been 1,000 years. Come on. Yeah, you know, there's going to be changes.
We don't know what happened in that Ferengi's bloodline. You know.
Right, right. And you know what? I forgot the third one, but it's just... I completely lost myself going on the side page about the alien thing. So I'm guessing it wasn't important. I'll lay it to the side. We can continue.
I was
saying I like that.
Yeah. In terms of the 32nd century, do we feel, I don't know how to ask this question or how to answer it really, but do we feel like the time has been established? Like, does it feel like we're in the 32nd century? And I mean that in, like, you know, when they jumped in time and they're now in this time, does it feel like a new time, or does it just feel like the show is saying they're now in the 32nd century?
I think so. One of the things that sticks out to me is everyone instantly teleporting to each other. That's always the one that takes me by surprise. I feel like I would gain so much weight because I would just teleport to, like, across the room. It's like, having that ability, I would never be walking ever. And I also feel like, to go back to the species mixing and stuff, I think a large part of what the 32nd century establishes is that post burn, a lot of people were landlocked. A lot of species were landlocked on planets. So you saw a bunch of hybrids where you're seeing a bunch of, I feel like almost there's so many characters that we've met where they're not purely of their bloodline. I'm sure there's still many that are like that, but there was definitely, you know, different species that were left on different planets. And you got people that are part Cardassian, part, you know, Ferengi, and all these different things. I think you will probably see more of that in Starfleet Academy. I would hope that you will just see that as a result of the burn, you had a lot of species intermixing. But by the way, I did remember what I was going to ask you guys for the third point just now. If this episode, say we're in an alternate, we're in the Kelvin timeline, and Star Trek Discovery was confirmed for season 6, and this wasn't the final season, would you feel the same way about the episode's pacing? Does it feel to you guys there's a sense of urgency, like you need to move things along because you know there's only so many episodes left? So it's almost, I felt myself getting frustrated at the same points you did, because I'm like, oh, we only got so much time left and they're sitting here fighting this damn bug and it's not working. Just move on, you know, kind of thing.
That's a good point. Yeah. Are the drawn out sequences super drawn out? And that is something I'm going to, actually, that's genuinely something I'm going to revisit this, because as you know, as we get more of the season, you know, is there going to be bits that either weren't or were too quick or weren't quick enough? I think I phrased that one right. Knowing that there is, it's countdown clock, there isn't going to be an episode 11, you know, I'm going to start writing down, you know, every week, like, you know, this could have been longer, or this could have been spent with another character. So why are we doing this today? I don't think I answered that question at all, Tom.
I'd like to think that I'd have the same view, because I think it's just sort of a pacing thing in general that I'm having an issue with, rather than it being the last, because I keep sort of forgetting that it's the last season. I'm trying to watch it as just what it is, but obviously it's difficult. I mean, we've said this many times, it feels so surprising that they didn't know that this was the last season, because so much of the writing implies that things are ending. It could just be a coincidence that they were ending certain things anyway, or people actually knew, and it wasn't until the end when they were like, oh yeah, by the way, it's ending, we need to add a few more scenes. I don't know, but it really feels like an ending. It's interesting for what Discovery is, for the ending to feel so like its own story and its like own compact episodic thing to end on. I think it's a good idea. I think they've made the right decision, but it also the fact that it isn't this like end of world, end of universe thing feels like what Discovery would normally do. Be like, well, we'll make it like the end of the universe, because then when it ends, you know, we've ended on this big heightened thing. But I would still have problem with the pacing. But if it wasn't ending, maybe not. I don't know. I just think it's the way that the character stuff aside, the way that Star Trek handles action sequences is always interesting, because you know, older Star Trek, like the action stuff was normally quite cheesy or like quick, or someone gets stunned with a thing and that's kind of it. But they did the job they needed to do. And in the newer Star Trek, kind of since the Kelvin films, have a much more of a focus on action, which is fine, but it's just not the action that I find quite interesting. So Star Trek is bad. No, I'm joking.
You make a fair point, because Star Trek fans definitely have a tolerance for low action episodes that other fandoms don't. If The Mandalorian had a 7 to 8 minute talk scene, people would be rioting on the internet. You know, they just don't. There's not a tolerance for the same fandoms at Star Trek. I mean, there's TNG episodes. They spend 15 minutes in a meeting room discussing what to do before anything else happens. Yeah. And, you know, you don't think about that because you're so in the fandom. You know, that's just normal. It's whatever.
You're so right. I do love those talkie scenes, but I was raised on them. That's a good thing as well. I wonder now, people who are coming to Trek with shows like Discovery, like Strange New Worlds, you know, if they go back and, let's say, having not seen things like Next Gen, DS9, or even, God forbid, the original series, you know, how they will engage with those much slower paced those episodes. Because, I mean, we don't make TV like that. Across the board, we don't make TV like that anymore. It's all about get the next music cue in there. Yeah. And, you know, kind of like, oh, how we move on to the next thing. And I'm not saying I don't like that. I'm just saying TV has changed.
Yeah.
But shall we do a rating?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Right.
You asked a question, I answered it.
you did at that. You did at that. Tom, what would you rate this episode out of 10?
I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10, which might seem harsh, but I just think in the grand scheme of things, it's going to be one I probably forget about and never really come back to or think about very much. There's some good stuff in this for sure. But yeah, it's just, it's okay. Is how I feel about it. So 5 out of 10. I want to make it a change as well. There's a very specific thing in the first episode that it would take a point away. I think I gave it 7. It would take it down to 6. Something I'm very annoyed about, but that thing I will save for a Cargo Bay 101. So I won't talk about that just now.
Okay. All right. Breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
Mick, out of 10, what would you score this? And you're not allowed to give breadcrumbs because we don't know when we'll get you back.
Right. I will give it a 6 out of 10. And yeah, you know, before everything we've seen before, I felt like I liked far more. This is kind of a slowdown. And yeah, no breadcrumbs, but stuff on the way I find it might be a lot more entertaining. So, you know, we'll just wait and see. This one, stand a test of time, probably 6 of 10 based on what I've seen.
Yeah,
I'd be very, very middling as well. I'm nicer than Tom, so I'll give a 6. But but I think you've both made very fair points on it. The bits that were great were great. But I think overall, as an episode, it's a bit like, you know, oh, yeah, what's the good of season 5? It was great. 1 and 2 were good. Yes, 3. Oh, 4 was good. Yeah, you know, it might end up kind of falling in that category.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But because it was a big episode, Wilson Cruz was very good in this episode. Yes. And is the reason I'm giving it a 6 as opposed to a 5. Not as opposed to a 10. That sounds really bad. right. Okay, we're kind of coming up to today. Can I just really quickly, I know we don't normally go to the 300,000 subscribers. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone. Really, really, really appreciate that. Thank you for supporting. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for liking. I know we're blue in the face saying this, but every time you do any of that, it makes a difference. So thank you very much.
And you guys did a cool little video to commemorate it. You and Ellie, I watched the full thing. Insanely jealous that What Culture has a studio and a living space that you guys work at, because we Cinema One doesn't have that. We all work remotely from home. I was like, they get a building.
Well, we have a building, but none of the people at Trek Culture, well, most of the people at Trek Culture don't live anywhere near it.
It's so. Very true. Yeah, I flew from Ireland. Ellie got a very long train journey up. Poor old Chris, who can be seen being shot at the end of the trailer. He lives close by.
And I was supposed to be there, but for some, I can't remember why I couldn't make it. So it's just one of those things. But it's a nice building. We have a building. Yeah.
I love as well. It's quite funny as well, because, you know, urban renewal is brilliant. There was some roadworks going on outside. So I love when we beam in, it's just like yellow cones and that like safety netting as well. Right behind us, being just like, welcome.
Welcome to the building. Picard season two of you.
Yeah.
All that's missing is a Sanctuary District poster somewhere.
Yeah. That's just what Newcastle looks like, everybody.
I think what we'll do to kind of bring this episode to a close is we will speak to our lovely audience, by which I mean we will carefully curate questions and we will answer the ones we deem fit. No, Tom, you had one specifically that you wanted to for us to discuss.
Yeah, it was just it was kind of related-ish to one we did the other day. So someone asked Sean, like how many costumes you own. And you went through all your different Star Trek costumes and T-shirts and things like that. This person at Castle Rogue asked, is there a Starfleet uniform you don't like? And I like this one because I actually have an answer, and it might be polarizing, I'm not sure. But I can't remember the actual name of them, but the uniforms from Wrath of Khan onwards.
I'm going to push you down a set of stairs when I find you.
Yeah.
That is a hot take. You delivered on that one.
Yeah, it is a hot take. What are they called again? Is it the
Monster Maroons?
Monster Maroons, yeah. I just, you know, another hot take. I like the motion picture. I like that it's boring and cerebral. I like 70s sci-fi where nothing's going on and it's strange and weird. Like, I like the motion picture. And don't get me wrong, I like the rest of the movies too. But, you know, the Wrath of Khan, or the Wrath of Khan, as most people say, it kind of made the layout for what most of the movies would do, and a lot of the shows would do, which is have the big bad guy, have the battle in space, blah, 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 which is fine. But I like the motion picture for its sort of strange, discovering kind of nature to it, and weirdness. And I love the 70s costumes. I like the way that everyone has these, like, you know, big V-necks and these weird tight fitting things, and like everyone has like big beards. Like, everyone has come out of the 70s in that film, which I really like. And then post that film, it's just these big, like, thick wall looking suits, which is fine, but it's just it makes me feel claustrophobic watching it. Like, I just imagine sweating in those costumes. Well, I think the funness of the 70s outfits is cool, because then we never see them again, really. So I'm just not a fan of those. They just feel a bit clunky to me, and it just, when I see those costumes, they make me think, oh, isn't it a shame we didn't get to see more of that kind of thing?
Well,
Sean is shaking his head.
He's just slowly raging.
Just can't with you. No, look, my love for the Monster Maroons is definitely on record. What I will say is Admiral Kirk's uniform in the motion picture, I love. I think that looks fantastic. I think, and you can see that was an inspiration for, I think, Admiral Pike in the Kelvin universe. There is definitely an inspiration crossover there. I'm not crazy about the pajamas that like Decker and Spock and all wear for the rest of the movie. I do like, again, Kirk in his short sleeve V-neck.
Yeah.
So there is definitely costumes in it that I like. No, actually, off the top of my head, I do have, straight away, I have a least favorite one, and it's the one Picard season 3. There's a flashback where Picard and Riker are toasting the birth of Thad. Mm-hmm. And it was like they had extra first contact material that day, and they give him this really weird, it's almost like a cravat on the uniform. And I remember they were joking about it at the time. I just said, why do they do this? Basically, the filmmaker saying, don't overthink it. And I'm just like, oh, but you didn't, so I won't. and, you know, I say that with love. That was, you know, things like that. I do like me some uniforms, which is one of the reasons I love the Monster Maroons. They are the best ones, and you're wrong, Tom. but, yeah. I'm trying to think if there are any other ones that I grew to like the Enterprise jumpsuits.
Yeah.
I really did. Initially.
Yeah. I think mine would probably be, I don't know if it's the full uniform. I like the TNG tops, but I can't help when I watch Picard like walk through in like scenes, I can't imagine. They're so tight. The pants are so tight that I feel like you just get a terrible wedgie making your way like down the hallway and stuff like that. And just also just being a guy that is not of slim and muscular build, I can always feel like that would be a pain in the ass if you were at all portly to wear those TNG era style uniforms. It feels like it'd just be miserable to sit in.
Would be a bit. Agreed. And actually, although I like the season one uniform, well, again, they grew on me, the season one uniforms, mother of God. Oh, sorry, you were having a second helping at that dinner, were you? Okay, right. Yeah, so you're leaving the service is what you're saying. Jeez, okay, fine. All right, I'll go to the gym. Thanks.
Well, you know, the Discovery season one uniforms took a while to grow on me. And I know that's, you know, at a time I felt like I was more forgiving of it because it was a time when the fandom was just literally finding anything to critique Discovery season one for. I was like, okay, let's just put aside the uniform stuff because I don't want to rabble rouse any further. But that one took a while to grow on me, for sure.
There is, I'm conscious of the time, but I'll finish up. There is an alternate universe where there was a version before airing of those uniforms that would have been more of a hybrid of the Enterprise jumpsuits and what we got in season one of Discovery. And me being a completionist, I would have loved to have seen even a background character wearing something like that. C'est la vie. You know, some fan production will do it. I know they will.
Cool. I've got my own actually question. So sorry, everybody, but it's my podcast, so bugger off. I've got a question I want to ask. I was just thinking about, and then we'll say our goodbyes. What is, excluding the film, so just all the TV shows, what is your favorite visual Star Trek show? So what is your favorite Star Trek show in terms of visuals, the way it's filmed, the mise-en-scene, if we want to go back to my film studies classes, the lighting, etc. Like, visually, what's your favorite show?
It feels like a cop-out answer because I feel like it's the hot show, but I think Strange New Worlds really itches that part of my brain to where I'm just always constantly like, damn, this looks good. You know, the uniforms are shiny, the visuals are on point. I feel like they brought in some good directors to really like drive home, especially the courtroom episode they did in season two. I was like, this feels like a legal procedural, like it's being shot that way. Really enjoyed that.
I'm going to go a little bit classic, DS9, but from season three onwards, where they changed how they film with the cameras they were using. Mm-hmm. Because I think it contains the best of the Next Generation and Voyager. And while still holding its own aesthetic really, really well. I know it didn't have anything like the CGI that we have today, but I like what they did with it. It worked at the time. So, yeah, DS9 seasons 3 to 7.
Yeah, there's some early DS9 episodes when I'm like editing them in a video. I'm like, I can't see a thing. I don't know what is going on.
I kind of almost don't appreciate, or sometimes do appreciate, the heavy lifting that the remaster did for the documentary. I mean, whatever about episodes were like that, they slightly more budget, whatever. Like Emissary looks fantastic, I assume. Ah, no, okay, but look, it's, you know, the way it was filmed, it's very blurry.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the grand scheme of everything, where we've concentrated on Star Trek Legacy and all that, like, you know, maybe with some of these shows canceling, they'll have some money to bang toward a remaster of DS9 and Voyager.
That would be amazing.
That would be great. I love that.
That would be right.
But yeah, I think mine is either a cliche or not a cliche, depending how you look at it, but I think mine is TNG. It's just so clean looking. I like how bright it's lit. And as I've said, the carpets, I love that kind of aesthetic that we don't really see again. And in terms of like the way it's shot as well, the editing, but most of the editing is similar in the older shows. Like we're dealing with sort of new kind of editing, but like what I don't like in new Star Trek, which I have to deal with when editing these videos, is the camera is constantly moving and constantly jumping back and forth between people. And you might just have like a 2 or 3 group setting. And, you know, normally you have the wide shot of them and then you can push into the single shots, you know, and then you've got like the medium shot. But with them, it's like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And in like a weird... So I've noticed before where it's like you have the shot of the person and then it cuts to a shot where the camera is slightly moved to the left. And I'm like, what was the point in that? And I think they're always trying to have this energy where you have some TNG shots that go on for 10 minutes and it's one single camera and everyone is just there in front of the screen. And I really miss those days and I really like it. And I think for TNG specifically, for me, it feels the most science fiction and the most alien in terms of the Star Trek shows. Like DS9 feels more alien in the same way that like Babylon 5 does. Like it feels that kind of like way. But TNG has that kind of like, again, cerebral kind of pacing and setting that I really like. So it feels like you're on a ship in the future for me, which is why I like it. But with all that being said, on that bombshell, we reached the podcast.
Perfect. And, yep, everyone's wonderful. Mick, thank you so much as ever for joining us. Anything Strangers Aren't coming up that you'd like to plug?
Well, I should be talking to some surprise people about an upcoming book they have coming out that's very exciting. So I'll probably be on before that to talk about it more in length.
Excellent. Amazing. Very, very exciting. Speaking of upcoming book, hey. Tom.
Hey.
Yeah. I was going to do that segue myself. So we're back in the segue game. Yeah, my book, Witch Hazel, part of a Slayer's Pilgrimage saga, coming out this year, some point later in the year, not too sure when, still hopelessly going through the final stuff to get it to a point where I can actually announce the date. And the cover, there is a cover, a front cover, that is pretty nice. So you guys will be able to see that at some point. But yes, my book, please buy it when it comes out, or I will... No, just please buy it.
Everyone, you're awesome and wonderful. Thanks so much for subscribing again. You're brilliant. Goodbye. Thanks. Bye. Live long and prosper.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.